In nature, the term predator doesn't have a negative connotation. It simply means hunt or die. In the IT world, there is a food chain, but it's rapidly evolving. And the predators that were designed and built to survive and thrive are now struggling to find their place. Some are brash, and they're still going after the big game, but others have retreated and are tracking smaller prey. What we are seeing today is two completely different ecosystems, two totally different food chains, intersecting with each other, and we're finding top predators in each of those food chains suddenly competing for the same resources. With all of the movement that's been occurring in the IT world in the last few weeks, this week, we're going to know thy enemy. I'm Joey Lombardi, and this is Sourcecast episode 41. Before we get to our main story, let's discuss the acquisitions that have taken place over the last 8 days. Hewlett-Packard Inc. has successfully purchased Samsung Electronics' printer business for $1 billion. Technically, it's $1.05 billion. Prior to this news announcement, I didn't even know that Samsung had a printer business, but apparently, they own 4% of the market, a whopping 4% of the market. This 4% of the market represented a rather sizable chunk in Asia, which is why it was so attractive to Hewlett-Packard Inc. In addition to its 4% market share, Samsung apparently had a massive amount of patents that HP Inc. was eager to acquire. From various reports, this is part of HP Inc.'s larger strategy to redefine and reposition themselves in the copier and enterprise print market. The graveyard of software companies, OpenText, has agreed to purchase Dell's enterprise content unit for $1.6 billion. Part of that enterprise content unit is the tool Documentum. Users and fans of Documentum are concerned that the move to OpenText will spell the end of the tool effectively. While some analysts believe that OpenText will invest in the tool, many think that that is not the case, and this is truly the end for Documentum. Salesforce picked up two companies this week. One, messaging startup Haywire. Haywire is a Cambridge-based messaging startup that lets businesses receive text messages through an 800 number and other business lines from customers. They also picked up Gravity Tank. Gravity Tank is a consulting firm based in Chicago. Salesforce and the acquired company's representatives have not disclosed the financial terms of these acquisitions. Verizon has purchased a company called Sensity, and they're involved with sensor technology. Sensity is based in Sunnyvale, California, and they have been focused on using energy-efficient LED lighting to help cities build Internet of Things platforms on city streetlights. This acquisition seems to be very similar to IBM's acquisition of the Weather Company for their sensor array. In the rumor mill, there's some talk that Google may purchase Box. The two companies recently formed a strategic partnership and are working together to develop and deliver next-generation intelligence to Box users searching for content on Google Springboard. While such a suggestion certainly makes for good headlines, the likelihood of this acquisition occurring is very low. Speaking of Google, there's a fight coming their way. And it's not with the companies that you probably think they should get into a fight with. Amazon? Yeah, that makes sense. Microsoft? Makes even more sense. But in the long term, Google and IBM are set for a collision course. At the moment, there are two companies that are leading the artificial intelligence push. IBM with Watson and Google with DeepMind. Both companies want to focus on technology that rapidly ingests and analyzes documents. Both companies want to focus on automation. Both companies want to focus on using that rapid document ingestion in the healthcare market to better improve case analysis and outcomes. While both companies currently make money in very different ways, Google through advertising and IBM through a traditional sales team, the dynamic is going to change for both companies probably. You're seeing Google focus more on sales and trying to get a traditional customer base to use their products. And you're seeing IBM go the other way and offering some of their platforms free of charge or at low cost to increase their user base. In addition to artificial intelligence, they're both competing in the cloud space. IBM has their SoftLayer platform and Google has their Google Cloud platform. At the moment, both companies are introducing products in a very different way. IBM is slowly shifting into a software as a service offering. They're trying to get their products out to customers as easy as possible via a subscription model, via the BlueWorks and BlueMix platforms. This transition to a software as a service offering into a subscription-based model isn't happening as quickly as they would like, but that is their overall strategy. Google, on the other hand, has a very different architecture structure than most cloud platforms. Yes, they offer CPU, they offer storage, they offer a means to host an application, and now they're also offering database product. But because they're so different, the adoption rate and the migration ability sets them apart from their competitors at Amazon and Microsoft. But Google has some things working for them. Again, the artificial intelligence. The fact that they are consistently turning their artificial intelligence systems in on themselves, finding better efficiencies. Google is going to be able to sell their product differently. It's more green. It uses less energy. It's more earth-friendly. In the long run, if there is an energy crisis in California and in other areas of the country, they'll be better positioned to grow their services. And now, not only are they fighting over artificial intelligence in cloud, there's talk that they may be butting heads in blockchain. Blockchain is a decentralized transmission system made famous via Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a decentralized e-currency that makes it easy to anonymously transmit funds to other anonymous parties. IBM sees an opportunity not only in banking, but also as an encrypted means to transmit documents, like healthcare documents. Humana President and CEO Bruce Broussard recently penned an article talking about the transformative abilities of blockchain in the healthcare industry. He basically paints the picture of all the hospitals in the country and all of the people filling out forms time and time again. If there was a centralized system to be able to share and transmit those documents in an encrypted and safe manner, that would certainly save patients and hospitals a lot of time and headache. And they think that blockchain can help. This is not the first time that someone has attempted to centralize document repositories and collection in the medical industry. But in these modern times, when security and patient privacy is of the utmost importance, this sort of technology could be the breakthrough to finally get the job done. And while Google has been very quiet as far as blockchain, insiders are saying something is definitely brewing, that they most definitely would not ignore blockchain or developing a product in that space. It may certainly seem that the future of IT and the buzzwords of the future are set. Security, artificial intelligence, cloud. What happened to the companies that are falling behind? Are they truly falling behind? Or are they just not following the hype? Oracle famously stated that they would never go to the cloud. And now they're calling themselves the biggest cloud company in the world. Oracle is an interesting case. They drug their feet to get into the cloud. Then they went in head first. They've aggressively been purchasing companies to boost their footprint, to boost their numbers, to boost their revenue. And some have accused them of cannibalizing their software sales and reporting them in the cloud space to bolster the numbers in the cloud. While it's evident that Oracle is trying to grow through acquisition, like the most recent acquisition of NetSuite, investors and technologists are starting to push back. T. Rowe Price has raised an issue of the NetSuite application and the price of $9.3 billion that Oracle is willing to pay due to Larry Ellison's personal investment in the company. Other news sources are pointing out that Oracle has to grow through acquisition and not through strategy or the introduction of innovative product. Oracle is a company that is known for having difficult relationships with their customers. The most famous example is the mayor of London, who famously stated that he would fund any startup that can come up with a competing product just so they can get off of Oracle. So for a company that is potentially late in the cloud market, perhaps doesn't have the strongest strategy as far as introduction of product into the cloud market, is potentially cannibalizing their real revenue maker, which is software and software subscriptions, to make gains into the cloud market, and has perhaps not the best relationship with their customers, you really have to wonder how long their excellent database products are going to keep them safe. Amazon and Microsoft are nipping at their heels with ever-improving database products. So if their customer base erodes, what is Oracle going to do? Can they continue to hang their hat on database, or will they have to pivot like Hewlett-Packard and IBM? Keep your eyes on Oracle. We're not going to do a news that you can use this week, but I do want to bring up an interesting story. Recently in the news, Mark Benioff, who is the Salesforce CEO, stated that he still loves Larry Ellison. Since we just finished talking about Oracle, I thought this would be a good way to close this. I think it's easy to say that Mark Benioff is easily Larry Ellison's most famous protege. And as his protege and someone who knows him closely, since the start of Salesforce, he has been known to criticize Larry in the press. And Larry has been known to criticize Mark and Salesforce in the press quite frequently. When you step back and see that both companies are obviously successful, you have to wonder, do you sort of need that frenemy to push you and prod you and motivate you to do your absolute best? Benioff recently told Business Insider, and I quote, "Business is a lot like tennis. You get on the court with your friends, you play as hard as you can, you can get upset, you say crazy things, you go off the court, you have lunch, you have a glass of wine, and you remember how much you love them. I love Larry Ellison. He's a great mentor to me, he's been a great friend, and there is probably no one in the industry who has done more for me than Larry Ellison, and I am very grateful to him." What a lovely thing to say. It's nice to see some classy behavior. And I'm actually going to share one other piece of news about Salesforce. This week, Mark Benioff announced a new chief equality officer. I sometimes like to use Salesforce and Oracle, add some levity to this podcast. They go at it, they say crazy things, it's fun to sort of make fun of that. But I also want to acknowledge some of the positive things that Salesforce has recently been doing. Several months back, Salesforce took on the state of Indiana due to their discriminatory LGBT laws. Benioff put his money where his mouth is. He had a major presence in the state. He said he didn't like the law, and if they didn't repeal it or change it, he was going to take his Salesforce offices out of the state. And while that was going on, he offered to relocate any employee that felt discriminated against to California. Now he's taking it up another notch by introducing a chief equality officer. Salesforce actually poached Tony Proffitt from Microsoft, and the position is in charge of initiatives relating to minority employees, but will also extend beyond diversifying the software giant's workforce. Benioff said in a recent interview that it's about investing in basic human rights, such as women's health and public education, that will help lift up minority communities. This may be a novel idea and maybe doesn't catch on at every corporation, but it's an interesting investment in societal change and improvement that you don't see every company do. And that's all we have for this week. As a reminder, you can find Sourcecast on iTunes, Google Music, and all of your favorite podcasting applications. Sourcecast is recorded in bucolic Mantua, New Jersey, and is produced and recorded by me. Music has been provided by Google. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.